and welcome to Big Yay Energy. I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Theora.
Come along with us while we dive into the fun and nuances of queer media. Representation matters.
And we're here to talk about it.
Cheers, quiz.
Yay! Beautiful. The Big Yay Energy team is back with a super fun interview today. Our intro. And our interviewee today is Gypsy Taylor from Our Flag Means Death. Thank you so much for being here. Gypsy is the brilliant costume designer that was behind that show, and we are so, so, so excited to talk to you. Welcome, Gypsy.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm very excited to be on the Big Gay Energy Podcast.
Woo! Before we begin, did you work on both seasons or just season two?
Just season two.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Wonderful. Because the filming moved from LA to New Zealand, correct?
It did. Yeah. It did. Yeah. Yeah. And during the first season, I was unavailable on another project. And then the designer who did the first season, she was unavailable for the second season because she was off doing Loki in London.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. She's a brilliant designer. Yeah, so the timing worked out that I was able to jump on board, and funnily enough, I was living in LA, so I had to relocate to Auckland. Yeah, which is fine by me. I love working in New Zealand. The last time I worked in New Zealand was about 18 years ago on the Chronicles of Narnia.
Yeah. I want to go to New Zealand so bad.
I just want to travel.
So pretty, and it's the best people. It's just beautiful. Must go.
Okay, well, we asked Twitter, I guess we should say X, but I hate that.
I refuse.
If they had any questions for you, and boy, did they have them. they asked so many questions, in fact, that we decided to just let them take over the entire interview.
I'm okay with that.
So here is what the audience is dying to know about the costumes.
Okay.
So our first question comes from a fan who has been designing their own concept costumes for the characters in season three.
Amazing.
Unfortunately, we're not getting a season three, but you know what? This is helping it live on.
Yes, correct.
So at indigo_key asks, did the actors' personalities, interests, etc. inform your design process?
I started designing a long time before I met the actors, like probably 7 or 8 weeks before I even met them. And I knew the actors' work. So I was already very familiar with Rhys Darby and Taika Waititi and that New Zealand crew. So I already knew their personalities from, you know, what I've seen of their work over the years. And it wasn't until the actors were in the room with me that then we put a few little twists on things. So essentially, I took what had already been established in season one and then read all the new scripts for season two and kind of did my little design tweaks and thought what I thought would look good and pretty much had it all designed. And then the actors arrived just a couple of weeks before we shot. So little things changed when they were in the room, you know, like different little character things that they thought, oh, I might like to keep this scarf or I might like to, you know, hang on to a few little items, but otherwise it was all done by the time they arrived.
Very nice.
Yeah, I had a lot of creative freedom and I had a fantastic director, David Jenkins, who obviously lives and breathes Our Flag Means Death. So, you know, everything that I came up with, any concept, any drawing, any design, I'd run past him and he had all the characters in his wonderful brain. So we were able to do that together.
I don't believe someone asked this in here, but I'm curious, what is it like going into a show that already is established rather than starting the show yourself?
It's a little bit intimidating because the designer of season one did such a beautiful job and brought these characters to life. And so upon arrival, I was like, I don't know what more I can bring. These are amazing, you know, but then there was a whole new wild story and a whole new lot of new characters. And so I was able to put my stamp on it, but also pay homage to the beautiful work of season one.
And it was wonderful. Fabulous.
No, thank you.
Killed it.
Thank you. We had a lot more girls in this season, which was really exciting to do. A lot more femme fatales. Which also the boys were really excited about. Like when they all arrived, they were like, oh, thank God, there's some women.
That's really refreshing to hear. And like, it really made everything so much more fun. Cause then you get like the different culture, you know, that was coming in with like the Chinese kind of like pirates. And so it was really fun in a lot of different ways to see like a melding of people and costumes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, oh, so fun to design. Like, so fun.
All right. So the next question we have from you is from @everyonegetcake, which love that.
Or orange cake.
Yeah. They don't specify. Hold on. Let us know if you're listening at Everyone Get Cake. What kind of cake?
But is this cake or is the cake by the ocean thing?
I think it's like Samba. Samba is the cake. You know, Roach with his orange cake could be like a little nod to
yes, the 40 oranges.
Correct. See, I immediately thought of Marie Antoinette, so definitely curveball with that one.
Everyone gets cake.
Go on, what's the wonderful question?
All right. So Roach's Cake is asking, for a gypsy, you've cited Prince, Adam Ant, and Iggy Pop as influences for Our Flag Means Death Season 2.
Absolutely.
I would love to hear more details about how these and other musical icons inspired specific costumes on the show.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think, music always inspires me. Whenever I go into any kind of job, right now I'm working at a job that's set in 1989, so I've been like delving deep into like the Billboard charts of 89. And so as a designer, I will always go to music first, music and art and anything pop culture-y around that period. And our show, you know, was 18th century, which is very classic. But then David Jenkins said to me, he goes, you know, think of it like these characters are just walking down the streets of New York in the 80s. And that's one of my favorite periods because you're thinking about like Patti Smith and Warhol and Keith Haring and Robert Mapplethorpe and all these genius artists of that period were like bubbling away, creating incredible art, including all the musicians. And so straight up, I like started a playlist of my own and you know, heavy on Blondie and Heart and all these just great artists of the time. And that was really inspiring me just with the sounds. And of course, each of those artists came with their unique style. And you think about someone like Prince and Sheila E. And they were just so original and unique and queer and all the good things. And so I straight up went to them and went, you know, Prince had these like pants that sort of like instead of a straight fly, just had this diagonal fly with buttons. And even as simple as that, I incorporated that into Archie's leather pants, and instead of buttons we put big screws through, and so just like little bits like that. And Adam and the Ants is like very new romantic, lots of like they were honing it on the pirate style in the 80s because of Vivienne Westwood, and so they'd already like taken that inspiration from the 18th century pirates but made it 80s and flamboyant. And so, you know, there was just so much good visual and musical reference to bounce off of, really, and just add into our show to make it feel like all the characters were walking down the streets of New York. So you could just see them and go, oh, hey, what's up? Good leather pants.
I can see that now that you're saying that. Yeah, it does fit.
It's funny that you do mention Vivienne Westwood because I immediately clocked your earrings. There's this like necklace lighter that I want to get so bad, and it's of that symbol made by Vivienne Westwood. But it's I'd have to save up to get a piece by her, but like that's definitely the dream.
Yeah, she's one of my heroes. I mean, she was such a unique designer and put her own stamp on a time period and she invented punk. So she's just the coolest.
Definitely a classic staple.
Oh, yeah. So I admire her so much. I have a couple of little pieces. They're expensive, but I save up over time. So we're going to get that little tiny piece of beautiful things. I'm glad you noticed. I put them on for you guys today. I dressed up a little bit.
Speaking of impressive work, we have a question from Emily Loves Kale. What is something you've worked on for the show that was technically difficult or impressive, but something viewers may not realize because it wasn't on screen for that long or for some other reason? Just because we'd love to see any cool details that we may have missed.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good question. I mean, straight up, I thought of the mermaid, but then you all saw that on screen because technically that was difficult and wonderful to come to life.
Oh, don't worry. We have multiple questions about that later.
Yeah. So much curiosity. Okay, good. It was impressive.
Okay, good. Things like Zheng's army, it seemed so simple, but we made every single outfit for her entire crew. And they were these beautiful hand-dyed linen tops and pants. And the pants had this incredible cut that my tailor, Anna Deacon, invented, which was sort of this crossover pant that tied. So you didn't need any buttons or zips or anything current. It could have just been... They were just very simple but so beautiful. And then we had to make about 300 of them because we had so many of Zheng's crew in, and you never knew their size because you'd get extras on the day. So we'd had to have like extra small to extra large in, and they all had to be broken down. We also individually made all their shoes because those sort of little Chinese slippers are really difficult to get. They look very modern. They kind of look like a little van slip-on. So I went back to some 18th century reference of how they were made, and they were just two pieces of black cotton with this kind of woven base, and we made 300 pairs of shoes. Like, when does that ever happen? Like, normally,
so wild.
Yeah, wild.
Wow.
Yeah. How long did that take? Designing Jing's crew in general, outfits and shoes.
It's hard to put a time limit on anything that gets made because we get a certain amount of pre-production. So you're doing all the things at once. So you're chipping away by a little bit to get everything done in time for the schedule. So Zheng's crew came up a little bit later in the schedule. So we were able to just chip away at it a long, long time. But, you know, like in the dye room, everybody was turning blue and... And it had all this like really delicious piping and all this lining and it was a lot of work. And I think you see it on screen because it feels like there's a lot of her crew working for her. Another one that didn't make it on screen, which was very sweet, was we hand knitted Wee John's socks. And yeah, you never saw them, but they were so beautiful. They had... I have this wonderful friend who's just the most incredible knitter in New Zealand. Her name is Sarah Shepherd, and she hand knitted little socks with skull and crossbones on them.
That is so darling.
So beautiful, but you never saw them on screen, sadly.
Do you have a photo of it?
I do, yeah. I'll have to find it and I'll upload it.
I'm sure everyone would be so excited to see it.
So beautiful. And Wee John, Christian, is just the most beautiful man. And he's huge. Like we had to hand make shoes for him too because he has a very large foot. And so when the socks came out, they were like these little Christmas stockings almost because they were so large. And then they fitted him perfectly, and he loved them. Yeah. So I've got
Did he end up keeping the socks after season two wrapped up?
I can't remember. I can't remember where they went. Usually we wrap everything up and put it to storage and let the producers keep everything should there be another season. So, yeah, I'm not sure where they ended up. I'll put them online and maybe some knitter will come forward and knit a pair to match.
Sounds like a challenge, everybody listening at home.
I've seen how good and clever you makers are.
I'm curious. I know you've been talking a little bit about like actually making things. Are the costumes mostly like handmade from your designs, or are they like gathered from other things you find that are already made?
All the principals, so any of my main cast and my day players, people like Ricky and the likes of, other characters, they are all handmade from scratch. Head to toe, like all the jewelry, all the belts, and we gather pieces. So we gathered a whole lot of belt buckles that were old, but then often in film, like we need multiples for things. So if we found some really old, weird piece of chunky metal, we would cast it and make a few of them, you know, so that we had multiples. But yeah, everything was made. Even, you know, I was talking about those screws in Archie's pants. They had to be soft, so we sculpted them as well. We couldn't use real screws because otherwise she wouldn't be able to do all of her high kicking and that sort of thing. And Vico's fish hook belt was sculpted.
And very nice.
Yeah, so everything you see or screen printed and, you know, inventing fabrics along the way to make it unique and original. So I would draw the sketch and then I would detail it and say, you know, I sort of want it this color and this texture. And then I had a workshop of just wonderful creatives and makers. And, yeah, we made it all. Anybody in the background was sort of like pieced together from stock that we found, but we would punkify it, you know, we would rip it and burn it and do all the fun things.
It sounds like what the crew on The Revenge would do, rip it.
Right.
Yeah, this will look cool.
Yeah, we made like fake vomit that we put on things so that like rum vomit, and then we had like fake bird poo from seagulls and anything that made it look like they were like living in a at sea. We had this kind of like salt rim texture that we would spray paint on everything so it looked like this, you know, that salt had eaten away at their clothes. Yeah,
that's really such a great detail.
Yeah. It is.
So I'm sorry, you just keep saying things that I have questions about. What did you make the vomit and the bird poop out of?
Honestly, I don't know, but I'm pretty sure it involved a lot of paint and sort of like Mod Podge gesso-y stuff that you'd color, so it all had to be hard and in place but still look wet. So you can add things with like a little bit of resin or a little bit of, there's like art materials basically, so that they're safe for the actors and that we can also throw it in a washing machine if we need to, but then it stays. Black Pete always has had like one really big glob of seagull on his shoulder that a seagull had shat on him.
He would always.
I definitely did have a quick follow-up question since when you were talking about like burning clothing, adding vomit, stuff like that. That did raise the question of, did you design Steed's cursed suit that they find on the mercenary ship, I believe, I want to say?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, that is so impressive. it was such a look. It fit him so well. It was so like complimentary. Like I can see why he was very apprehensive to give it up when the crew was like, it's cursed.
He had to look very handsome in it, which is not hard with Reese. I found it very easy to make him look super handsome, and he just had to own it, you know. And the minute he put it on and it had those big matador shoulders and these kind of like dandy Oscar Wilde tails and you know, that it was velvet and all these delicious things. And I gave him all these jewels, like all the buttons, they're encrusted with jewels. And yeah, I mean, he'd like danced around the room. And I've said before, like we make everything first out of a calico, which also is known as a toile. And so you just make it all out of calico. So you make sure that it fits before you cut into the beautiful fabric and make the final costume. And so even in the calico, which is just cream, he was spinning around the room and like started doing the tail flick and like his shoulders went back and he like his bum got a bit tighter and all this like amazing actory things came out in just the calico, which was rare and wonderful.
Very, very lovely.
That's how you know it's right.
That's right. You're like, we've got a winner.
This isn't about the costume in particular, but if that's cursed, how is the shirt under it not cursed?
Yeah, we also had that follow-up question because we were so confused on the
I mean, that's not really a question for you, but just a curious.
I mean, well, look, going into this show, David Jenkins said to me, you know, a lot of our storylines are a little bit Looney Tunes. It's a little bit Bugs Bunny, you know, like we're going to say it's cursed, but then, oh, that shirt's so cute. Maybe he just keeps it because he looks really hot in it. Well, like one of the classic ones was when Blackbeard put all these black leathers and threw them over the ship into the ocean, like deep, deep into the ocean. And then he finds them and appears and gets dressed in them and appears out of the ocean wearing them. And I was like, how is that even possible? Like, what, don't you want me to make an outfit out of seaweed or something? And he's like, he's a gypsy, Bugs Bunny, Looney Tunes. Like, he just he finds it in the ocean. I was like, all right.
And his leathers are fine.
Just like the boats, they can magically find, navigate in the ocean and find the right person they're trying to find.
Yeah, well, it's a comedy. We don't think too hard about things. We just make it cute.
I know. It's amazing. All right. Yeah. So for the question I'm actually supposed to ask.
Go on. While you ask the question.
Oh, please do.
At First Watch Live is curious about the Calypso's birthday party scene and anything that a non-expert might not notice about the details of the costumes in there.
Oh, well, there's so many. Everybody's there on the ship.
I know. Fancy, too.
I mean, Ned Lowe was a really wonderful costume. And I've spoken a lot about, you know, Wee John's drag and Izzy's beautiful look. And but I think someone like Ned Lowe was a really beautiful costume. We made just a pure 18th century cut for Bronson Pinchot, and it was based on Paganini the violinist. And I just thought, look, we'll just go straight up 18th century. I know. So I was like pumping Paganini in the background and going, oh, it's so evil and stringy and metally. And so we made this full 18th century outfit, but then again we did the calico and the toile, and then before we sewed the whole thing we painted all the fabric silver and chrome, so it had that metally feel. So normally an 18th century outfit like that would have been, you know, beautiful velvet or some sort of luscious, but we made it this metally silver chrome to kind of punkify it up a bit. And then things like his little buttons were these beautiful little like metal coils that are like the end of a violin. You know, when the violin strings go up and they tighten, I wanted all his little buttons to look like that and for him to feel really evil. And I think that was a costume that kind of disappeared a little bit into the chaos that ensued at the party. But he was definitely one of my favorites. I loved his look. Oh, and I gave him like silver cowboy spurs, which were not even invented in the 18th century, but it just felt right.
And like, I love that you bring up Paganini, because like he like embodies him, like with like the evilness and like especially with like his fixation on like the Orchestra of Pain or whatever. The Symphony of Pain.
It was just
you saying that and making that comment about the inspo for him, like it just puts every like puzzle piece into place, because like it just adds more of an extra depth to it. It's just genius.
They called Paganini the devil's violinist, like whenever he played surely the devil was playing, and I was like, oh, he's such a good bad character. I always like the bad characters, they're the funnest in design. So that's one in Calypso's party that I really love making.
Everything about Calypso's party was fantastic. So many fun costumes for all the people that were at the party or crashed the party.
Yeah, that's right.
Our next question comes from Pirate Girl. How did you communicate the character's growth/transitions through your medium? Was there anything you were particularly proud of that perhaps didn't make it on screen?
That's a lot. That's a good question. That's a lot for me to think about. I'm trying to think of other things that didn't make it to screen, but I feel like almost everything did. It was something like the Wee John socks, you know, that were there, but you didn't see them. Can't think of what that might be. And then as far as like transitions goes, I really loved how how we split our crew. Well, at the end of season one, when the crew is automatically split up and half go with Blackbeard and half are stranded on an island, I love that we cut to like 3 months later and they'd still been living under a bridge, but then I got to really like Blackbeardify the entire revenge crew and, you know, really Mad Max them up, basically, because Blackbeard's whole outfit is very much inspired by Mad Max. And so, you know, we had to make him black and nasty and made out of all these found objects. But that was a really big jump for someone like Jim and Frenchie and the ones who were in like pretty simple, beautiful pirate costumes to begin with. And then I went really far. So that jump was my favorite transition. And then it was slowly like taking them out of Blackbeard, but keeping the rule that pirates don't have a wardrobe. They steal their wardrobe. So they more like they lost pieces and gained pieces. So they never really transitioned all that much. It was a little bit more believable. So someone like Jim, you know, had these fantastic boots that we made that were like buckles all the way up to the kneecaps and these brilliant pants that were like based on a Pete Byrne pant. I don't know if you know Pete Byrne. If you don't, brilliant. He loved Vivian Westwood. Talk about, he was a style icon. So I did those paper bag pants and the braces, the suspenders, but I wanted to keep that look because it looked so cool. But then just started to incorporate a little bit more of Jim into that. At one point we were going to bring back like that beautiful vest from season one, but by then I think Vico had really like taken to this new evolution of what Jim was. So yeah, they were my favorite sort of character transitions.
Oh, I love that. That's really poignant about like the time jump too, like, and how that was very abrupt, like their wardrobe. And I like the realism, like you said, of like pirates can't just, they don't just go to stores and buy clothes, like they're thieving.
They steal them. That's yeah. They're a good pair of boots on that dead pirate. I might take those.
Yeah,
exactly. And I think that's what makes it more like serendipitous and like ironic, the fact that like Steed finally gets a chance to have like more of like a pirate aspect when he stumbles upon the cursed jacket and yeah. The crew doesn't let him keep it because it's cursed. Yeah. So like that just kind of added like a little undertone of like comedic relief. Yeah. For the ironic aspect, because it's like, yeah, pirates can steal whatever. But yeah. If your crew thinks it's cursed, you're shit out of luck.
That came with Reese as well. Like he came into my fitting room and I said, you know, you've lost everything. Like you've been stranded on an island for 3 months and living under a bridge and you have nothing anymore. So like whatever you find now is what becomes your new persona. And Reese was like, oh, I don't even get to keep any rings. And I was like, no, you get nothing. And he goes, what about like one earring? I'm like, nah, not yet. And he's like, but what about like a little bit of lace from his coats? And I'm like, all gone. Blackbeard's burnt them all. And I just had to keep, he was like a little boy, like, oh, I can't have that. I was like, no, he's lost everything. He was so sad that he'd lost all that opulence of season one and that he was just down to like just a shitty pair of shirt and pants. And I even went so far as, you know, that little like maitre d' scarf he has, that was just a bit of the couch lining from the ship just ripped off, and it still had a bit of the tassel, so it was just like really crappy bit of fabric, and we just sort of tied it to make him look like he had some sort of opulence, but in actual fact it was just from a crappy old couch.
See, the game plan he should have went with is making the argument of, but Taika got his leather suit back. Why can't I keep an earring?
I know. And I was like, take it up with the director. This is not my fault. But one ring, Gypsy. I was like, all right. Yeah, later on, let's still use some rings. I'll make you an earring.
That's adorable.
Yeah.
That's so cute.
The best.
Our next question also involves Mersteed. So Jason _ I'm going to mispronounce
Bergeron.
This. Bergeron. Thank you. They asked, I was curious how long it took to create Mersteed's costume and how many people or departments were required to make that happen.
Amazingly, it was one incredible woman called Hayley Egan, who is a dear old friend of mine in Australia, and she's an incredible props maker. I've worked on many films with her, and she's all, as long as I've known her, she's had an obsession with mermaids and sea creatures and octopus, and she's often sculpting things like this jewelry or it, so I just knew, so when I read that there was a merman in the script and they were talking, they were having the conversation about should it be VFX, should it be practical, and I was just like, I've got a girl. I have a girl who makes mermaids. Let me do this. And they were like, okay, let her do this. So I called up Hayley, and of course she was just like over the moon. She was like, this is my dream to make this happen. And then we started. So she probably had about 4 weeks. She did it all from Australia with a couple of assistants helping her. Mainly they were like pouring glitter into every scale and helping her cast it and airbrush it and have it come together. So she headed up the tail, and we had four in the end. We had a rehearsal one, and then a stunt, and then a two-hero one. So it was four tails in the end. And one of my favourite things that happened was they were huge, right? So she said, I'm going to hand carry them on a plane from Sydney to Auckland. And she got two suitcases and sliced the middles out of both of them and joined them and then like gaffed. So she built like a triple size suitcase. And then when she got to the Auckland airport, and New Zealanders have the funniest sense of humor, the guy says, you know, are you importing any meat or fish into the country? And she's like, yeah, four fish.
Got a whole mermaid in my suitcase. You want to check? Yeah, right.
He's like, what is it? And she's like, she just came for the weekend to drop it off and like stay and make sure it was all okay. Oh, so she probably just had hand carry with her clothes and four mermaid tails in this like giant handmade suitcase. It was brilliant.
That is so wild.
It was brilliant. Yeah.
That's so then, amazing. I want to see the suitcase.
Right? Yeah. Oh, it's somewhere. It's somewhere. So then but when she got to the Auckland end, we fitted Reese properly. We'd already done like a pre-fitting within Lycra, and I'd posted that to her. So she built on that, knowing his size. So then we got it on him, and then that was it. We had like 2 days to shoot. We had like a day to practice and for them to do all their breathing techniques and figure out how deep they could go. And then we had to work out the buoyancy of the tail itself, because it was really, really heavy. So
yeah,
you had to make sure that he could still float with the weight. So we did lots of those sort of buoyancy tests and with the stunt department, and then we shot it, and it was magic, actual magic. I cried.
It really was.
Yeah,
it was so
good. Yeah. So that was, between me and Hayley and her assistants, we did that.
Yeah, I think my favorite fun fact about the whole Mersteed is, because I saw an article talking about it, and I just think it's hilarious that it purely became a thing because Jenkins was like, I want to see what you'd look like as a mermaid.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was beautiful. And
he was.
He was.
And knowing that Reese, you know, has like little gingery hair and sort of like gingery chest hair and gingery, you know, skin tone and everything, I was like, well, he has to be a goldfish because it's just such a sweet little kind of pathetic fish.
Yeah.
And it just matched all of his persona, and then after I decided that he should be a goldfish, I found a little like Chinese cultural thing that said, you know, goldfish mean a good luck and love. Mm-hmm. They tied up all these really beautiful positive imagery. So I was like, well, of course he has to be a goldfish. Yeah,
that's just lovely.
And Reese was just like, he's just said he's always wanted to become a mermaid. So it was just his dreams come true as well. We were lucky.
So many dreams came true with this one aspect of the show. I'm so glad they didn't VFX it because.
Yeah.
Thank you all. Yeah, it was so good.
You know, and it's a little bit hokey as well, which I kind of like.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you
just, yeah, came out of left field.
Yeah, you just go, well, of course I believe it. It's beautiful.
We did a reaction video to it, and Theora knew it was coming, and yeah. Zoe and I were talking, and she's like, shh, just watch. Like, what the hell
is that? Not stop laughing. It was so goddamn hilarious.
I know, but then you're laughing and crying at the same time because it's such a beautiful scene. So you're just like, this is ridiculous, but my heart hurts.
Exactly. I want to focus on like the pain and like agony that's currently experiencing, but like, goddamn that mermaid tail.
Yeah. And when you see outtakes of Reese, he'd like wink at the camera and do like flirty fish things. And you go, oh, what are we doing? What show are we making?
Yeah. I saw a behind the scenes of Reese making kissy, like a little Taika. Yeah. And I was like, I love it. I love this man.
Oh, they're beautiful, beautiful friendship.
Speaking of emotions, at Ramsey_B_OFMD wants to know what it was like seeing Reese in the full tail regalia for the first time and seeing this all come together and underwater.
I think Samba got a really good video. Very embarrassing video of me because I was like on the side of the pool just like clutching my heart and just being like I was so proud and I felt I don't have any children but I felt like a proud mother of a merman and I was like I've never been more proud that he like he went so deep and he swam so well and he acted underwater and he looked so beautiful and I just felt like a proud mother.
Proud mother of a mermaid. That is such a wonderful quote.
Yeah. I love it so much.
Yeah, I really was. And just, you know, when you see it all come together, like that's most of my job is we spend weeks making and refining and fitting and making sure that just that very quick moment on screen is as beautiful as it can be. And so just when that alchemy happens and, you know, you're there and then the hair and makeup team have done a beautiful job and they've covered him in glitter and, you know, then the props team have given him a scepter and you know, the stunt team have worked so hard at making sure that they can breathe and relax deep underwater. And then the lighting guys come in and put these shafts of light that hit the glitter on the fins. And, you know, it's this like a magical alchemy of when it all comes together and then they just go action and you go, oh, we all did that. We all came together and made that moment in film. So it's very rare when things like that come together so beautifully.
I saw the behind the scenes video you posted on Instagram about it and it just blows my mind how they're able to film underwater and just having the huge tanks. I'm impressed. That has to be a lot of work.
And you know, there's only a few of those tanks around the world. So New Zealand has one, Gold Coast has one, Atlanta has one, Mexico had one for a little while there. And so there's like all those films, they like the Pirates of the Caribbean, Meg, you name it, like they all go to the same tanks and film in there. And it's amazing, you know, what magic can be made.
You said, was it Haley who did the tail? Haley, yeah. Did she make tails for other shows and stuff, or is this her first time making it for a TV?
I think this was the first time she'd made one for a movie. I know she'd done personal ones for her and her daughter for swimming and whatnot, but she's sculpted sort of sea creature-y things most of her career. So she does this like incredible octopus chandelier that she'd sculpted that all lights up, and yeah, like she's just very, very clever. I've worked with her many times and every time I'm just blown away by what she's able to create. We worked on a McDonald's commercial recently, which was weird and funny. And I wanted to make like a pair of Balenciaga Crocs that were a McCrispy chicken burger. And so I was like, like we'll just slice the croc in half. And then we'll have like a chicken patty and some lettuce and some mayo and some mustard seeds. And she's like, yeah, yeah, got it. Goes away, comes back with all these photos. I'm like, you're a genius.
Well, I probably would be be able to afford it. If she does have an Etsy shop, I would love to peruse.
Yeah. I think she sells her jewelry online. HaleyEganDesign.com from memory.
I was just curious because there was a kid's show that filmed in Australia called H2O that used a lot of mermaid tails. So
they did. Yeah. Yeah. That was one of the, they were one of the first teams I thought of. I was like, oh, who made those? Because they were really beautiful, I thought. I thought they were beautiful on camera. I was working on Narnia up in the Gold Coast when they were shooting H2O. And I remember just kind of going to lunch one day and walking in the back lot, and some guy was just pulling a trolley with like four tails from H2O just stacked on each other. And he's just like, you know, doing his job. And I was just like, what am I?
I'm amazed at how realistic these, not that I know what it would look like in real life, but like they look so good.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they look so heavy.
Yeah. So heavy because silicon is really the only thing that holds up underwater and in chlorine, because those pools have to be like heavily chlorinated and chlorine kills everything, kills all fabric. It's like bleach. So silicon has to, so you have to find a way to like make it light enough, but sort of all out of silicon latex and wetsuit materials. And they're all really dense and really heavy. So yeah, we knew we didn't have long. Yeah, but we had like we had these baths on the side as well, that were like just big old tubs from, you know, the hardware store. And they all had their different type of cleaning product in it that would clean the latex and the silicone and the lycra between shots, so that we could like keep the longevity of it. So we'd like dunk them, like, you know, like old photographs, and they all have their like solution of their tail. It was like that, but with a fish tail. And when we get to the end, and like hang it up, and we'd be ready for the next take.
That is hilarious. Oh my God.
And we had to build a ramp for the pool as well, because
to roll him in.
Yeah, to roll him in. So I basically, I was like, oh, how am I going to get him around once he's like in it? And I thought of back to this like Bette Midler performance where she played a mermaid in a wheelchair. And I was like, oh, well, we're just going to go rent a wheelchair. And so we were able to rent a wheelchair from like the local chemist or hospital, I don't know. And then I said, okay, well, he still has to get up into the pool, which is like 2 meters. So we talked about like a little sling, or do we carry him? And I spoke to the construction department, and they just built him a wheelchair mermaid ramp so we could just wheel him up and then kind of push him in.
That is so great.
There you go.
Off you go.
Yeah, I was wondering how he was going to walk in that. I was like, there's no way.
No. He can stand because the monofin, they call it, you can stand up straight in it. But then once you're swimming, it like flows with you, but you can stand. So he stood up while we did all the final glitter and makeup and everything. And then he just sat back down and we wheeled him in. I think Samba has footage of that as well.
Oh, amazing. Lovely.
Right. Our next question pivots. Sadly, we're pivoting away from Mersteed into Spanish Jackie territory. Ooh, so S in the wind, 43220 wants to know about the origin of Spanish Jackie's wooden hand.
Oh, you know what? I don't know that question. Somebody, I would imagine that she'd lost it in a fight because she's a very violent woman who loves chopping off noses, and you know, owns a pirate bar. So there's probably had been some encounter. But back in those days, like any sort of amputees or anybody missing any limbs would have been sculpted out of a wood, because it was sort of like pre-metal, you know, pre-industrial revolution. So if you were missing a limb, they usually had it sculpted out of wood. So I would imagine that's probably the storyline. And I like that she sort of like decorated it with rings and it had nails and it perfectly held like a cigar.
Yeah, I thought it was a very nice like little detail, because it's like, it's definitely like a blink and you'll miss it type of detail, because like she wears it so well. Yeah. Like it just looks like a regular hand, not a wooden hand. So it's such a nice like attention to detail type of thing.
Yeah, it's funny because again, it's that Looney Tunes thing. Like I never asked I didn't ask any questions. I was like, oh, she's got a wooden hand. And then I would just decorate it. I put like little lace frills and just decorate this beautiful hand. But I never asked where it came from. I'm sorry, I don't have the answer.
Oh, no, it's okay. I also just love that it's not just a normal wooden hand. It has all those attention to it has personality, like you're saying, which is
a life of its own. And Leslie would like act with it, you know, like everything became like this and she'd like demand do things. Yeah, I loved it. It was very, very funny.
So funny.
Yeah.
All right. So our next question kind of ties into Reese's, I don't want to call it a temper tantrum, but like a plea for extra add-ons. So
yep,
this question comes from Gina Dora, and they want to know more about the teal robe. And the reason why I brought up you and Reese's conversation, it's kind of like, is this like a compromise? Like, cause it looks so comfortable. I want to know, cause I know like Reese would have loved it. And I know Ed wore it cause he looked very comfortable in it. So was like that, like a compromise to like give like the crew like a little bit extra since like Ed had lost like his leather, like attire prior, like what's the context behind it?
Not that deep, but we would imagine that like he'd burnt the Blackbeard once he'd taken over the Revenge had sort of set all of Steed's clothes on fire in a heartbroken, you know, thrown him overboard, like get rid of anything that belongs to him. He doesn't want to see it. But the thinking behind it was that maybe he just kept one little thing that like just a little memory of Steve. And so, you know, and the robe in season one was so beloved. And I knew that we had this scene with them in bed having breakfast. And so I said, oh, you know, what if the piece that he's kept is just another robe that we'd never seen of Steed's? And, you know, something like those robes fit anybody. So kind of anyone can put it on and it looks beautiful. So then we started building what would be the next robe. And that's one of the ones that didn't get seen as much. And I have had a lot of questions about it, like what's the lining like and all of that business. But we made it so quickly and it was on screen so quickly that I don't really have any imagery, sadly, but it was this beautiful silk velvet, and it was in that tealy colour that we love that reminds us of Steed from season one. And then we ombre dyed the whole bottom in this sort of dark colourway, and all the inside was lined in a Chinese silk as like a little nod to Zheng, but not really. It was just pretty. So it was this like pale purple Chinese silk. And then I had all these, you know, because we were always scouring markets and thrift stores and Etsy for just kind of strange metally things that they would have found at sea. And I'd found these like curtain tassels that were bullion, which is like a metal, and they were just these balls with tassels. And we never had any costumes to put them on. And I always had them hanging in my office because I loved them. And I was like, ooh, let's hang them on the robe. So we had the off the sleeve. They had these pretty little metal tassels and yeah. And then he just, you know, then Taika wore it. And I think Taika kept that robe. I think he loved it.
Very lovely.
I was like, can I take this one home? And I was like, yes, yes, you can.
That's cute. That's actually so cute. Ended up answering the follow-up question from Gina Dora, which was the lining dip dyed? What color is it? Because they wanted to know for cosplay.
I know. I wish I had some good photos of it. Sometimes we're just rushing so much to get things done and on screen that I remember the fitting photo I have is just the plain teal velvet. And so there was no detail, no lining, no nothing. It was just like, here's the shape. Does that fit you? Yep, good, go, out, dye it. Da, da, da. Put it on screen, put it in a box, gone. Like it was so very fast. And so, I don't have many reference pictures, sadly. But yeah, the lining, it's like that Chinese silk that has little flowers. And it starts off as this kind of lilac and then it dip dyed into the ends, like ombre'd into a sort of a darker purple, which was Blackbeard's color. So I wanted like a touch of Steed and a touch of Blackbeard in there. So it was really the teals and the purples joined together with these kind of rusted metal bullion tassels.
Oh, that is adorable.
Thank you.
So we kind of talked about this a bit, but I'm going to ask again just in case your answer might be different. At Dean Bird on AO3, which costumes are you proudest of? Any fun stories from putting them together?
I mean, I'm proud of them all. I just told you I was a proud mother of a merman. Like anything that came out of the workshop and then was on screen, I was just like, oh, it's so beautiful. So that's a really hard one to answer. That is really like choosing your favorite child. I don't know if I can.
they're all fabulous.
Yeah, seriously. And they all had their own story and they all had their own persona, and then the actors brought them to life and everything. It was everything. Okay, all right. There's one favorite I had, which was... Which was this? I had this vision. That's right. I was listening to this podcast on the way to work every day called the Pirate History Podcast. It's fantastic. And he was talking about how so many rats were at the bottom of a ship, and the rats would eat all the food that the pirates had. So then they had to steal more food. And, you know, rats were always just like a problem at sea because they could live in the water and all that sort of thing. So I, one day, just for one of the pirates that comes into the bar, I was like, you know what we need to make? We need to make a jacket of rats. And so instead, like, and we use all fake fur in the show to be good to the world and good to animals. And so we built little fake fur rats. This wonderful girl on my team, Melissa, she made tiny little tails and tiny little arms and legs and little ears. And then we sewed like hundreds of them together into a vest. And then we took it to the breakdown department, who made it just look all crusty and like just dead rats. And there's just this beautiful rat vest in the show. And that's that piece.
I love it. I love it.
I love everything about that.
And I couldn't think of what like person to put it on. But when it all came together, I was very proud of the little rat vest.
I would be too.
Yeah, as you should be.
I wore it a lot.
I'm going to go find the rat vest.
Yeah, I would walk around the office wearing it. Everyone would be like, oh, my God, she's wearing the rat vest.
Just being historically accurate for our show.
Crazy designer.
But I think your first answer is really fair, because you should be proud of every single costume that was created. Because they all have a personality. They're all amazing.
Yeah.
I wanted to wear all of them.
Seriously.
Same. Same. Okay. I love it.
I'm going to butcher this next person's name, so I apologize. I'm trying.
Oh. So do you want me to do it for you?
At Freiburg Nadja. Is that close?
So my take was Freiburg Nadja.
Okay.
So we have two different takes. Go ahead.
Yes, hopefully one's right.
Okay, right. Nadja, what's your question?
They say, all my love to the makeup and costume designers. What a look. Loved every single detail.
Love. It's sweet.
So first love. Now question. Zhang's costume, how historically accurate was it?
Oh, she was like one of the very close to period costumes that we did. I didn't really like put a punk take on her at all. I looked at a lot of museum pieces of clothing. So there's a whole lot of like amazing museum websites like the V&A and Natural History Museum, and they'll quite often photograph pieces of clothing flat and you just kind of get the back and the front. And I had a lot of photographic reference as well, which was a little bit later because obviously cameras were not involved. And I looked at a lot of art from that period as well and just followed the lines because I wanted to get it accurate for, you know, the purposes of just being culturally representing it properly. And I am not Chinese, as you may have noticed. So I wanted to make sure that I did it right and good. So I really looked into what was worn in that period through the form of art and museums. And so we then just cut pieces and made our own version of what we thought that might be from the picture reference. So she was very much, you know, pattern-wise and detail-wise accurate to that period. And then the fabrics obviously had to be modern because I was buying them from a modern fabric store. But we tried to make sure that we got a lot of like Chinese silks and made sure that it was the correct Chinese print. And we made all the, they call them little frogs, you know, the knots. So we made sure that we handmade all of those, that they looked correct. Actually, back to those Zheng uniforms as well, Melissa, who made all the little rat tails, she also made thousands of those tiny little frog knots. You see like three on every Zheng uniform.
Oh, yeah.
So 3 times 200, she handmade all of those.
That's impressive.
Dedication.
Impressive. So impressive. Impressive. Yeah, so Zheng was very much spread. Actually, the one little punk thing that I did give her, though, was her leather cuffs. And again, they were sort of like based on Chinese armor a little bit, but then I added these kind of the silhouette of a little skull and then two little gold crossbars. So they were like three hidden little skull and crossbones as her little pirate nod. But yeah, otherwise she was very historically accurate.
That character is one of my favorites in general.
I love Zheng.
She's so good.
Yeah, we were absolutely just praising the character when we were doing our reaction episode for it. Like, just very well written and, like, the historical accuracy. Like, it's just overall it's such a good character.
Oh, yeah, she's so badass. And, I just love that character. And I loved Auntie as well, who was her side.
I love Auntie.
Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah, Auntie was just, like, everything. I loved her so much. And with Auntie, we had originally cast or it had been scripted that she was a Chinese grandma, but then once we met Annapella and in the reading we were just like, oh my God, she's so fabulous, then I sort of had to incorporate less Chinese and more sort of Maori culture, and almost again like that pirate thinking of like, oh, she stole that jacket and that vest and she stole those pants and this necklace is all the things she's collected along the Silk Road. Yeah. And so, yeah, so we were just making our own version of other pieces she'd collected from her journey on Zheng ships through the Silk Road, but still being, kind and aware to her Maori culture.
Very, very lovely.
Not too much.
So this kind of plays off of Dean's question a little bit, but it's its own question in and of itself. It's just a similar theme. This is from Ghosts in the Stacks. What costume were you most excited to see put into action, and or what was the most difficult one to create?
Oh, actually, the English army was really difficult.
Really?
Yes, because we had to, they were all period correct. And we had some of the uniforms from season one, but they were not enough because David Jenkins had this vision of, you know, like the whole English army taking over the Republic of Pirates. And so, again, that was like 300 or 400 costumes, much like the Zheng. But we, like I tried to, you know, and their colours were navy and cream and gold, and we couldn't find enough fabric around the world. And like all the wool we had to import from England because New Zealand didn't have enough navy wool to cover our army. And we had to like source gold braid from everywhere around the world to like just make sure we had enough meterage to cover like their tricorns and all down the thing. And who had like to sort of piece that together was huge and a mammoth effort of my team. And they were all like period correct pants and vests and shirts and coats as well. And so, and that, yeah, that was just a mammoth effort. But then when we saw it all come together on screen and you see them all like arrive and take over the Republic of Pirates, it was like epic and iconic. And then to have our casting, you know, our cast of pirates steal their uniforms and wear them, that then became like its own storyline. And I gave them all their own little characters of like what they stole and how they styled it on themselves, which was really, really fun. So that was probably like, it was the hardest work and had such a huge reward seeing it all come together.
With knowing the backstory behind it, that kind of raises the question. If you don't know the answer to this, that is totally fine. Yeah. What was y'all's costume budget? for like keeping like every like all of this in mind? Like, I would assume like it would have to be like at least like a pretty penny to be able to like reach out and source these products and like make sure it's still ethical. And it just seems like a lot going into the costume designing part, aspect of it.
Yeah,
if you're allowed to answer that.
Yeah, if you're allowed.
I don't know the figure off the top of my head, but I do know that that budgets on film are never as much as you need. And, you know, I've worked on really small horror films up to like huge James Cameron Avatar-y type budgets. And there's always, you just find where you lie in that scale and you make it work. And a lot of the time it's not really about like the materials per se. It's all of our budget goes into labor and the craftsmanship. So that is where all my budget goes, is into the leather makers and the dyers and the seamstresses and the runners and the coordinators, and that team is the thing that that makes it work. So when I talk about things like, oh, we had to go to England to get wool, in the scheme of things, that wasn't that expensive. It was more expensive for the seamstresses to sit there and sew 400 coats because their time is more laborious and expensive because of how long it takes to make it so beautiful. So, yeah. Did that answer it?
Yes, it definitely did. Yeah. Thank you for that.
But I don't know the number. I'm also like quite dyslexic and not very good with numbers. So
no, that's totally fine. That is fair. So our last question comes from @herebriefly1. What is the process for determining and creating the aesthetic for background actors? From season 1 to season 2, the styles of people in the Republic of Pirates seem to modernize and be more leather forward. So what went into that newer look?
Leather forward is such a good term. I want to use that all the time.
They also say thank you for everything.
You are welcome. Again, it came back to that brief from David Jenkins with the cast, where he just said it's the streets of New York. So of course I just went straight to punk, because 80s New York, it was a huge part of it. And also it was that punk scene that like informed hip hop and that became like that melded into that in the later 80s. So it just was hard, just punk. And I had a whole team who were just working on the extras. So I think it was a team of 5 or 6 team members who would find pieces. It might be from the thrift store. It might be from, just like an amalgamation of a million pieces. And we had it all lined up in like vests, pants, coats, jewelry, gloves, petticoats, crinolines, corsets. They just went on and on and on. So we built like a library per se of all of these costumes. And then almost every single one of those pieces went through the art finishing department, who break it all down and rip it and burn it and add vomit. And and then we just had this pirate library basically. And one of the things that David also was really adamant about was that, you know, it had an iconic look and didn't look like Pirates of the Caribbean, or we didn't want it to look like piratey per se. So we sort of invented a lot of characters that looked like they could have been in a band, or they could have been, you know, an artist of that period, and still incorporate 18th century silhouettes, but just really leaned in on, the New York streets of the 80s. And that's what gave it that beautiful look.
Very nice.
Leather forward.
It's leather forward.
Never going to forget that.
Well, that's all the questions we and the audience have for you today.
We
could probably talk to you forever. You're so amazing. Oh, really, and so is your
work.
Seriously.
Thank you.
I believe you worked on Wheel of Time, which we're going to cover at some point.
I did. Yeah. I was
That's
the,
one of Theora's favorite.
Oh, yeah? Really? It's a great show.
Oh my God. And this, and again, the outfits, just that's for another time if you're game to talk about it.
Sure. Yeah.
Wow. Those outfits.
Yeah, they were good fun. I was actually reminiscing the other day about the Tinkers. They were one of our favorite things.
Oh my God. Yes. All the colors.
Oh, yes. It was beautiful. Like we had this whole like Peruvian hot pinks, and it was delightful. Yeah.
The tinkers yeah, that was are really super fun from a costume perspective.
Yeah, that was a really special job. Yeah. And also, like, on the pages, like the Robert Jordan books, like, he just explains it all and you go, oh my God, yeah. That's beautiful. Like, how do we make that happen? And how do we come up with those eye to eye colors and, you know, all that
stuff. The Amberlynn's dress and, like, all that stuff. And
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're a fan. And they were great questions. So thank you to everybody who wrote in and asked questions. It means so much. And I love seeing all the cosplay costumes. It just warms my heart.
Also, I need to just confirm this for myself, but didn't you also work on the Chronicles of Narnia?
I did, yeah. The first one and yeah, the third one. So Lion, Witch and the Wardrobe and then the Dawn Treader years later. Yeah, yeah. I started out
there's
as a
costume. There's more than one?
Yeah, there's more than one. I think it's like a trilogy.
Three, yeah, there was going to be like four or five, and I heard a rumor that I think Greta Gerwig is
like, yeah, it's going to take over Prince Caspian, I think.
Yeah, first one was like one of my first jobs, and I was a costume illustrator. Wow, so I worked under the costume designer and just drew and painted all day long, and it was just
well, it paid off. Those costumes were gorgeous,
yeah, really good. Yeah, I've been very lucky to work on lots of fantasy projects, which is one of my favorites.
That's awesome. Again, we obviously could talk to you all day, but we are so happy that you joined us today. Thank you again for taking the time to talk with us. We really appreciate and love getting to know you and your work better.
And to you everybody at the Big Gay Energy Podcast. Thank you for inviting me. It was very special.
To everyone at home listening, make sure to check out Our Flag Means Death streaming on Max. And until next time, hydrate for lesbian Jesus.
And gay it up all over the place.
Bye.
Cheers, quiz.
And with that, we've been Big Gay Energy. Thank you for listening. We'd really appreciate it if you downloaded this episode and left us a review, no matter how brief. Your contribution will help us reach a wider audience.
We would love to hear from you about everything and anything. You can find us on all social media platforms at Big Gay Energy Pod or email us at biggayenergypod@gmail.com.
Join our Discord server to connect with us and our friends who also love queer media. The link to join is in our episode description below.
If you'd like to support us, check out our merch store on biggayenergypod.com. Or join our Patreon for early access to episodes, exclusive content, and so much more.
Until next time, hydrate for lesbian Jesus
and gay it up all over the place.